So I heard.
So the question was asked, there seems to be some court case going on now in the United States where a lady kept telling a man to commit suicide. They had been in a relationship previously. And finally he listened and committed suicide. How does Judaism view a person's responsibility for someone else's actions in committing suicide? So let's begin with the baseline that we view suicide as completely prohibited. The Torah says that a person who commits suicide does not have a portion in the world to come. A person has to know that they're destroying anything good they've done by committing suicide and that you're not allowed to do it. And you have to know that, and that's something you have to tell your chanichim. As Madrichei Bnei Akiva, I make a point in shul to address this, because the people who commit suicide are very often the people who do not tell you they're thinking about suicide. The people who tell you, oh, I'm going to go commit suicide, etc., are usually the ones who are not going to commit suicide. I'm not telling you to ignore them, but I am saying that the statistics are that those who email you and SMS you and tell you about the suicide they're considering are usually the people who are not committing suicide. The people who commit suicide are more often the people who didn't say a word beforehand. They were suffering silently inside. And sometimes what holds a person is the knowledge, I'm not allowed to. It's wrong. And I checked this with a friend of mine who's a Harvard psychiatrist, and he told me it's 100% true. It's been clinically proven that there are definitely people who, the mere fact that they know it's forbidden, it's prohibited, I'm not allowed to do it, that keeps them in line. He said they even tried this with police officers, that the police officer will tell a person who's standing at the edge of the building, it's against the law. You are not allowed to jump off that building. And there are people who that works with. Oh, no. Right? What are they going to do at this point? Right? But psychologically, it works. It's important. People should know. Obviously when you say it's the Torah, so it carries a totally different weight, religious weight. But it's important to know. It's important to mention. We keep telling ourselves that we are responsible for our lives. It's a recurring theme in Torah. And I want to make this a little bit sharper. My father has a line that says, I have to give you the background to the line. My father has a very austere countenance. He can look very tough. We're a German family, and my father's appearance can look scary. I had friends who, when my father would walk into the room, they'd burst into tears just looking at him. They got so scared. So it's to us, we never saw it that way, but other people did. Sometimes when we'd be upset, my father would tell us, maybe you disagree with me, that's okay. When you leave this house, you'll buy yourself a teacher that says, I survived. I survived the Frankenthal house. But then my father said a line, which I think is a very important line, and that is, we are all our parents' survivors. There's an element where every person can look back at the home they grew up in and say, you know what I went through, you know what I put up with. And it could be one's parents, one's grandparents, one's siblings. I heard horror stories from people of what they went through by their parents, by their siblings. Someone told me about a year ago or maybe 6 months ago a story of what they underwent by their parents. I have not been the same person since. They shook me to the core. I can tell you, I have not landed from that conversation. I thought I had seen it all. The story I heard from that person shook me to a point where I can tell you I've never again yet. I hope I will get back to my equilibrium. But he shook me from equilibrium. To hear what I heard there just shook the daylights out of me. Obviously, I cried when he told me the story, but I'm just saying this. For sure, people contend with difficult things, and I'm not coming to belittle that. I am saying that we have a major responsibility, and it's the responsibility of life to overcome that and build. A person cannot walk around their whole life and say, well, after what I went through, of course I'm like this. A lot of people can say that, and that's not a good excuse. We have to overcome our history. We have to overcome what we went through. We have to look at the world and recognize that we are all our parents' survivors. There's an element where every person has gone through certain trauma. And it could be at their parents' home. It can be other things they underwent. At the end of the day, we must overcome it and build. And we cannot live with that excuse. We have to overcome it. And that's a baseline as far as our perspective. Now, saying this line, you guys should know as madrichim, is empowering. Because it helps a person get out of their shell. Sometimes, especially a youngster, feels like their history is going to limit them and only they underwent what they underwent. I mean, statistically, I think it's 1 in 15, 1 in 20 girls that have been molested, right? It's a statistic that means in an average group you're going to talk to, there's at least one. And that's one thing that people undergo. I'm not talking, and I mean molested by your parents. I'm not talking about externally what girls undergo. I'm saying, Gary, you're dealing with young men and young women. Obviously, you're dealing with people that have dealt with certain challenges. And I'm not coming to belittle the challenges. God forbid. I think there's room to respect people for overcoming it, but also room to tell people that they must overcome it. It's not an option. It's a responsibility. So when you ask the question, how much can a person be held responsible for someone else committing suicide, our first line of approach is, the person is responsible for themselves. And if someone else is making them miserable, they have to overcome it. There's a book called A Child Named It. You guys familiar with the book? It's a true story. A kid whose parents put him in the basement, and they abused him to the point where they didn't call him a human being, they called him It. That's the level of abuse this person underwent. And they overcame it. It just gives you a perspective of where a person can you imagine a person that doesn't grow up with the family? There's the whole family and it, the one in the basement, it. He's not even called a human. And the person overcame it, wrote a book. A child named It. I never read it. I don't have the guts. I don't have the courage. I'm scared of what it'll do to me. I don't believe in reading about cruelty. I think that it's not healthy. It doesn't make us into better people. To know what cruelty exists out there, I believe you, there's cruelty out there. Let me learn about good people. It'll help me be a good person. We all have dark sides to us. We all have capacity to be evil. Let's develop the capacity to be good. The more we harp on the dark sides of us, the more we develop them. Let's focus on the good sides of us and develop those. So that's the first line of reasoning. First line of reasoning is man is responsible for his destiny to the best of his ability. Okay? That's number one. Point number two, we do have a concept called Misayed Varavera and Lifnei Iver Lo Titen Michsho. We have the concept that you're not allowed to create a stumbling block for someone else. If your friend asks you to go and buy pizza, you go to the non-kosher pizza store and say, here's the kosher pizza you asked for. So that's an Isur Deoraita, a biblical prohibition called Lifnei Iver. He's blind in that area. You gave him something that's prohibited. Right? So this is... The Talmud gives examples. You have a non-Jew who's standing on one side of the river and he can't reach the animal on the other side of the river. The animal on the other side of the river just walked into an animal trap and it clamped its jaws shut and sliced off its leg. So the animal goes wobbling away, missing one leg. That leg is called Eiver Min HaChai, right? That leg is prohibited to no hide. It's a limb of a living animal, Eiver Min HaChai. So the non-Jew on the other side of the river says, pass me the leg, I'm hungry. He can't reach it. Talmud says, you're not allowed to pass it to him. Because if you facilitate his consumption of that non-kosher food, it's not kosher for him. He's an Ohite. He's not allowed to eat a limb that was torn off of a living animal. Right? That's a biblical prohibition for an Ohite. So you're not allowed to pass it to him. So if a person's standing there and says, give me the gun, let me shoot myself. And you give him the gun, so then that's that. There, we do say the person was involved. We don't just say, well, he had free choice. He had a choice whether to eat that limb or not eat that limb, pull the trigger or not pull the trigger. Sometimes a person is a facilitator, and being a facilitator is a prohibition for any transgression. Meaning to facilitate doing a transgression is prohibited. So far, work together? And finally, we have the story of David HaMelech and the city of Nov. David HaMelech visited the city of Nov. Shaul, King Saul, got word of it, and then he went and executed the whole city of Nov. And it says that on some level, David was held accountable. What did David do? David could have and should have been more discreet about the way he visited the city of Nov. He did endanger them. He was a wanted figure. And the way in which he let it play itself out endangered them, and they all died. So on some level, he was held accountable to that. So here we see that sometimes facilitating something does have a level of accountability. It's not just the question, hey, King Saul had a free will whether he would kill out the city. King David did have a hand in that. So it's not the same as saying he committed the crime. It's not the same as saying he facilitated the crime like Lifnei Iver. But there is a level where if a person did have some causality, there is a certain relevance between him and that happening. There is a certain element of tshuva that they must do. A person can't absolve himself completely if they push someone over the edge. It's a very tough concept. So again, our point one is man is responsible for himself. A person can't absolve his responsibility. Our point two is that everyone has an excuse. We're all our parents' survivors, or our home survivors, or our surrounding. We have to overcome that. Point three is, if a person doesn't have access to it without someone else's assistance, that's the prohibition of Lifnei Iver. And finally, we have the concept of Misayeya, that sometimes even if I didn't facilitate it, I wasn't the one that made it possible, but if I did have some element of causation, there is some element where I caused it to happen, then there is some element of responsibility. The person can't say I had nothing to do with it. Okay? We do have the concept in Torah of Lo Ta'amod Al Dam Re'echa, that it is biblically prohibited to stand idly by when someone else's blood is being spilled. We do have the concept in Torah of Vashevoto Lo. It says if you see your friend's missing object, return him to him. So our sages say, why does it say return him to him? To tell you that sometimes you have to help a person return to themselves. Sometimes a person is lost. Lost as far as where they are supposed to be. It could be lost physically. They're not sure where to go. Take the time to give them directions to get out of the woods. Make sure they get back home safely. It could also be spiritually that a person is lost. And there you have a mitzvah to help them find themselves.